time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
The NHL Hour is coming up in a few minutes. Join me, Gary Bettman, and Bill Clement. I'll take your calls, answer your emails, and talk all things NHL. Coming back in a few minutes. NHL Home Ice, XM 204, and NHL.com.
Dibble from the show on MLB Home Plate, XM 175. Welcome to the XM Nation, Commissioner. Now back to NHL Hour with Gary Bettman. NHL.com.
And welcome aboard, everybody. This, in fact, is the NHL Hour. We're live from the NHL Store, powered by Reebok on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, as well as NHL.com. We'd love you to come on in and park anywhere. Here's the phone number. Be part of the show. It's 877-NHL on XM. That's 877-645-6696. If you want to fire off an email, feel free. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. Bill Clement with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. In just a couple of minutes, Gary's going to start taking your calls and answering your emails. And we're also going to have hockey legend Mark Messier joining us for a chat. Steve Wacom, the head of the NHL officials, is going to stop in as well. And we had planned to have Rocky Wirtz, who is the chairman of the Chicago Blackhawks, with us this afternoon, but he has been rescheduled. He's going to join us next week. And Gary, I haven't seen you since you were off to Pebble Beach. Did you bust par out there?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to play very much. I think I played seven holes the entire time. We had a little family medical emergency, so I had to come back, and it was all business out there. But we had a good session with the Board of Governors, and we fixed the schedule, we took a good review of the game, and it was a good session for candid dialogue among the governors.
Well, since we last spoke, the Flyers have ended up with another suspension. It's gone beyond the ridiculous. It seems bizarre that they've had five suspensions now. Riley Cote, your office suspended him for three games for a hit on Matt Niskanen in a Dallas. Now, the Flyers, according to reports, have been put on notice to keep their noses clean in the future. Exactly what did you say to the Flyers?
Well, you know, headlines sometimes translate a little bit differently than the actual conversations. Coley Campbell, who's our senior executive vice president in charge of hockey operations and who's well known as the league's disciplinarian, and I spoke to Paul Holmgren, the general manager of the Flyers, and while I accepted Paul's explanation and Coley's agreement that we had a series of bizarre, if not unfortunate, coincidences, that this wasn't a conversation that I wanted to be having with them again, that the club needs to make sure that we're not seeing these types of incidents, whether or not it's circumstantial, accidental, or a freak of nature. And I think that Paul, on behalf of the club, agreed with the sentiment that this wasn't a conversation that any of us should be having again.
If you do have to have it again.
We don't have to go there. That's pure speculation. The fact of the matter is...
Well, you can't suspend a GM, can you?
Can suspend anybody we'd like in a hypothetical world, but it would always depend on the circumstances of every case. And I don't want to make a blanket pronouncement as to what would or wouldn't happen, because you've got to look at the circumstances as they arise at the time. And, you know, things happen in the course of a game that nobody can predict. Which is why supplemental discipline in and of itself is so difficult. Mm-hmm. Every case is different. Every case has to be analyzed as to its specific aspects. And I'm just hoping we don't have another one of these.
And if we do,
we'll deal with it. Clearly, nobody wants to have another one of these, and we don't expect to.
Speaking of cases, there's one that is taking place in Canada. I believe it's in Toronto. The Todd Bertuzzi civil trial is underway, and this is a civil suit brought against Todd Bertuzzi by Steve Moore as a result of the Bertuzzi attack on Steve Moore. Gosh, in time, that was how long ago was that? Two and a half years?
I think it was in the 2003-2004 season.
Wow. Well, it's still alive, at least in the form of a civil trial, and apparently there's an allegation in a court paper that Mark Crawford, who at the time was coaching the Vancouver Canucks, during the second intermission of the game, let it be known to his players that Steve Moore should be made to pay. What is the NHL's involvement in this case right now, if any?
No, the NHL is not involved in the civil action at all. To the extent we were involved, it was at the time that we imposed discipline on Bertuzzi and on the Canucks, which we did at the time. We have not been involved in the civil action. Anything I know about it at this point is based on what I've read in the newspapers. There have been new allegations, according to today's papers, that have been pled. Whether or not those allegations are facts or provable, I have no idea. And frankly, from our standpoint, and I would recommend this to anybody, when there's pending litigation, it's not too wise to have comment.
Stay quiet. We're not going to let the callers stay quiet, are we, Gary? You ready to go?
We can take some calls.
Let's
We'd
go
love
for
to.
It.
On line three, we have Mark from Ontario.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you guys?
How are you?
Good. Billy, I love your segment on In the Slot with Bill. You guys do a great job together.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gary Bettman, it's an honor to speak with you. I think you're doing a fantastic job with the NHL and how we came. I don't want to call it the new NHL. Where we're playing nowadays is better hockey, and we're seeing fast-paced action, and I love it. And I just want to comment or just say about the scheduling. Do you find that it was a failure the last three-year process of the scheduling? Or do you just find it a trial and error period, and we just go on from here in the future? And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the call and the sentiments. It's interesting the way you phrased the question, because it really wasn't trial and error, and it really wasn't a failure, because we're in what will be the third year in a row of record attendance. So clearly, in terms of fans voting on the schedule worked very well. Having said that, there were some number of fans, not even a majority, who felt very strongly that every team should play every other team at least once. It was a sentiment that we got from the players as well. And so we were trying to be responsive to what we were hearing from some of our fans and our players in terms of a type of adjustment that they'd like to see to the schedule. The new schedule for next year, which is really the old schedule from before the work stoppage, is one previous to the work stoppage we never got any complaints about. It worked very well. It still accentuates conference-based playoffs. It still accentuates divisional play and divisional rivalries, not to the extent as the schedule we're using now. But the schedule we're using now, while it had some critics, it was, on the basis of attendance, an overwhelming success.
And the league is on the verge of busting last year's attendance record, correct? Or at least, well, I say on the verge. November was a new record, wasn't it, for the month of November?
Yeah, the November attendance for this November was an all-time attendance record for the league. So clearly there has been merit, which is why we wanted to make the change to accommodate the sentiment we were getting from some fans, but we didn't want to make a radical change because, quite frankly, we didn't think that would be appropriate. And I was actually concerned, as were a number of other people, that by making too radical a change, we might hurt our attendance. So we think we struck the right balance here, and we're looking forward to the schedule. Let's go to another caller. We have Michael from British Columbia on line five. Michael, how are you?
Hi there, Gary.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
I just have a couple of concerns. One of the main ones is, as far as you're concerned, will you ever put a NHL franchise in Canada in the next 5 years or so, or forever, however long you remain as commissioner?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm glad you asked it, because there's been a lot written and a lot commentated about. There's been a lot of speculation, particularly over last summer, all of which is inaccurate. If we have to relocate a franchise, which is something we try to do because we don't think it's fair to our fans who've supported both emotionally, financially, with their time, their franchises, we don't like running out on our fans, and we have a history of fixing franchises when they're in trouble. There were a number of Canadian franchises at one time that were in trouble. We've had a number of franchises both in Canada and the United States in bankruptcy, and we've worked very hard to fix them, and we believe that all 30 of our markets can support their franchises. But if we have to relocate, or if we decide to expand, which is something we haven't decided to do, all potential opportunities will be explored. Canada or U.S. or any market in either place has not been ruled in or ruled out. We will look at all of the opportunities if we go through an expansion franchise process, or if we decide, for whatever reasons, we have to relocate a franchise. And again, relocation is something we try to avoid. So to the extent anybody's suggesting that we're anti-putting franchises anywhere, they're simply not being accurate. Another caller, Alan from New Jersey, on line one. Alan, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling in.
I have a question. The popularity of the league in the U.S., I mean, a lot of my friends don't know really popular names anymore, such as Roberto Luongo, Sidney Crosby. How do you go about fixing that, trying to make the game as popular as maybe it is?
What we need to do is continue to promote the game and promote the players. We're doing it with more exposure than we've ever had before. We have NHL.com and the club websites, which have all been revamped, and we're working very hard to get our story out. Now, having said that, there are probably more people overall watching the game, either nationally or locally, more people attending the game than at any point in our history. And so while critics will suggest that we're not strong and we're not popular, perhaps if you compare us to some other sports, we may not be as big or as popular, but our fans are the best. And, you know, I think our fans actually do a great job of converting their friends to becoming fans as well. We've got the best game. We've got the best athletes. And if people continue to give us a chance, we're going to be more and more popular.
I would probably say get your friends to buy a computer and a television, because if they haven't heard of Sidney Crosby, they're doing something wrong. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I think just getting online would probably help that. Who hasn't heard of Sidney Crosby?
That's hard to believe. Line two, Air Two from Ottawa. You want to talk about officiating?
How you doing, Mr. Bettman?
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Watch what you say, because Steve Walkham, our chief of officiating, just joined us in the studio. So you can direct the question to me or to him or to both of us.
Well, maybe to both of you. I mean, I can appreciate that the change is a necessity. But one of the things that I have as I watch a lot of the games is some of the, if you will, inconsistencies in the calls and some of the phantom calls that we're seeing almost on a nightly basis. And I was just wondering sort of what your take on some of that was, if it's being viewed as still a work in progress, or if we think we're sort of heading in the right direction and we're going to remain status quo.
Well, I'll answer, and then I'm going to let Steven answer. You know, one of the great things about our fans is the passion with which they follow the game and they watch the games. And we don't get as many phantom calls, and we don't get as much inconsistency as we get criticized for. And it is a work in progress, though, because every night the officials are being observed and critiqued and coached. And it's our highest priority. And I think Steve, you know, has one of the toughest jobs in all of sports. Steve, talk about all these inconsistencies.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great. Jump in. Hey, thanks, guys. You know, in terms of officiating, there's when you're a fan, if it doesn't go in your favor, you're going to turn first probably to the officials and maybe blame the players and the coaches second or third. But what we try to do is we really try to minimize our mistakes. And the guys are always working to get a perfect game, and they only have one look at it. In high speed, they don't get three or four looks in high def. They're not looking to make incorrect calls, but they do happen within the game. And the guys that are our top performers, and these guys are all top performers, really do minimize these mistakes within the game. And And I would say that the feedback from the players has been stay the course, call the penalties when you see them at any time in the game, and if we do that collectively as a team, we'll be consistent.
Hey, Stephen, what's the hardest part of your job?
I think the hardest part of my job is, you know, dealing with calls that cost teams games in their eyes. And probably the second hardest part of our job, my job, is to take guys out of the playoffs because, for the most part, we have way more guys that have earned an opportunity to work than we have spots for them.
As the chief of officiating, what is it exactly that you do every day?
Well, I would say it starts off in the morning. You
make this good, right?
Yeah,
because you're
yeah,
getting paid
yeah,
to
yeah,
do this
here,
job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it starts off with a radio show. No, it starts off with in the morning we go through all the calls, the questionable calls from the night before. We provide some direction back to the guys on the team to have them look at them, review them, because each guy gets a DVD from the game. Deal with calls from coaches and general managers on everything from a rule explanation to a situation that may have happened to a confrontation that may have happened with a coach.
How many of those do you get a day, roughly?
I would say we get one or two calls a day, at least, that where you have to hear both sides of the story and then have it iron out because the game's got to go on, and we want these guys that are working in the games and coaching in the games to get along. It's the best thing for our product. So we also do a lot of planning. We have a whole scouting department where we're out there looking for the next best talent. We also have assignments ongoing that we're building and working on. And for our guys, we're building video to teach them, to guide them, so that we can be as consistent as we possibly can be night in and night out.
And how good do you think the officials are when it comes to enforcing the rules and being consistent?
Unbelievable. I have the opportunity to be at rinks, not just at pro rinks, at amateur rinks all the time, and I can assure you our guys are really good. They're not only are they good physically, but on a night-to-night basis, they make very few mistakes for the number of decisions that they have to make at the high speed that they have to make them at. And I'm proud of the guys because they're committed to one standard now. That's the NHL standard. And that's great for our game because it'll allow the product to prevail.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for stopping by.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
And the refs do get their eyes checked every training camp, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Just want to make sure of that.
Oh, yeah. 2020. The boys are solid.
Okay, good. Thank you, Steve. Always good to see you. We're going to step out when we come back. Gary's going to take more of your calls, answer your emails, all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com.
Want an in-depth look at the NHL? You're in the right place. This is NHL Hour on the Nation's Hockey Station, NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And welcome back, everybody, to NHL Hour. We're live from the NHL store, powered by Reebok in the heart of Manhattan. NHL Home Ice, XM 204, as well as NHL.com. Here's the phone number, 877-NHL on XM. Our email address is NHLHour@NHL.com. Gary, looks like we've got some callers that are
been on for a while,
banging down the door here.
How about Tim from New Jersey on line 4, 21 minutes. Tim, thanks for hanging in there.
Thank you. How are you today, Gary?
I'm doing okay. What's going on?
I had a question about the current collective bargaining agreement. First, let me say I don't think you're going to have another work stoppage, but I was just wondering, is there anything in writing in the collective bargaining agreement that says, okay, we have to negotiate by this time, or if this expires, we keep negotiating and we go year by year? Is there anything like that in the current deal?
The collective bargaining agreement actually has a somewhat flexible term. The original term is 6 years, which means it would have 3 years to go after this season. The Players Association has the option to reopen the agreement after next season, year and a half from now, or the Players Association can extend the 6-year term to a 7th year. This was all done to give the players the option, if they liked it, to make it longer, and if they didn't like it, to be, come back and address it sooner. We don't have a provision, although the laws governing collective bargaining require bargaining in good faith, require maintenance of the status quo, and a variety of other things that, unless you're a labor lawyer, you probably couldn't care less about. But our hope is, particularly with the new executive director, Paul Kelly, in place, is that with a good open dialogue, that our labor relations, that our relationship with the players and the Players Association will have taken a turn for the better, and that we can move forward together trying to grow the game without any of the acrimony that, that plagued us in the past. So I'm hopeful that with the system we have now, which is fair to both sides, as the league grows, the players share in it, and with a new executive director, we're hoping that the atmospherics are better than they've ever been.
Gary, you mentioned Paul Kelly, the executive director of the NHLPA. There is a suggestion that I believe was, I'm not sure how long it was talked about at the Board of Governors meeting, and it's being attributed to Paul Kelly, and that is the expansion of the schedule from 82 games to 84 games, whether it's Paul Kelly's idea or not. What do you think of that?
Well, it's something that Paul has mentioned. He has discussed with the players. He's been on a tour visiting teams. I believe as of the time he made the comment, he had visited 11 teams, and he indicated to me that he really wouldn't be in a position to decide whether or not that was something the union and players were interested in until he had a chance to talk to all the teams. If, in fact, the union wants to go to 84 games and it's something that makes sense, and there are a whole host of issues that have to do with that, including having to start the season either earlier or later, it could be added to the games that are played interconference. Instead of playing 18 games interconference, we could play 20. So it's something we'd look at. Obviously, we would have to shorten the preseason, but it's not something that's on the table right now.
We mentioned as we came on the air that Mark Messier would be joining us, and he is doing that by phone right now. And if I'm not mistaken, Mark, you're in the Bahamas?
Yeah. I'm pounding nails and building a house over here.
Are you expecting sympathy, or are you trying to stay out of the sun? How are you, Mark?
I'm doing good, you guys. Doing great. Nice to be on with both of you.
Thanks for joining us and putting down the hammer for a while. So let me ask you a couple of questions. With all the Stanley Cups that you've won, what was the most challenging or most difficult aspect of winning even one?
Well, obviously they all are. And sometimes people might have thought that it was easy for us in Edmonton with those great teams we had. But I can tell you every one was very difficult and very challenging. Obviously winning the first one is always getting over the threshold of winning a championship was very tough. We learned a lot of lessons along the way. We were beaten many times before we won, so that first one's always difficult, and of course the challenges in New York as well. Playing in a city of that magnitude presented some different kinds of challenges, but we didn't have anybody on our team that had won a Stanley Cup in 1984, and so we were all experiencing everything together and going through the journey of what it takes to become a champion without anybody there with the experience of doing it before. So that was quite challenging, but obviously, like I said, New York brought on different challenges.
Speaking of New York and the Cup run in 94, have you ever thought about or woken up in a cold sweat over what would have happened had you lost Game 6 against the Devils in the game that you guaranteed?
To this day, when Nathan Lafayette hit the post there late in the third period there, I've jumped out of bed many times there, and with that cold sweat you're talking about, there were so many close calls along the way. There were so many chances for us to win it, so many opportunities where we could have lost it. You know, obviously, when the hockey gets to that point, there's the slightest mistake and can be the difference of winning or losing. And fortunately for us, we were able to make it happen. But many times have I had that same dream where things didn't go well, and even after I've watched it a few times.
I bet there are millions of Ranger fans who probably feel the same way.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think we're all on the pins and needles there that last period.
This may be a strange question since you're down working on your hotel, but had you ever given any thought to what your life would have been like had you not made it to the NHL and you were doing something else?
Well, and I hope there's not a lot of kids listening right now, but I hate to say that I threw all my eggs into one basket. I just loved hockey so much, and that's all I really thought about. That's all I really wanted to do. Of course, I played all the other sports, but not with the same intensity or drive that I played hockey with. And I just think that, you know, if things wouldn't have worked out, obviously I would have had to deal with that. But at the same time, maybe it did work out because I did put that much attention and dedication towards it. So it's a little bit of both.
You know, I've been at your retirement ceremonies in New York and in Edmonton. I saw you inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and you emoted incredibly, and I say this in a positive, admiring way, that you could be that candid emotionally in a public setting. Were you that emotional as a player in the locker room?
I think that was part of what I guess you could call it that. I just think I didn't really try to hide any feelings. Obviously, at times you have to, the old 24-hour rule, and address things later on. But overall, I just kind of tried to not hide anything that I was feeling, and wore his, you know, badge on the sleeve, so I guess, so to speak. And I think that emotion was part of when I played my best, when I played with a lot of emotion. And obviously, hockey is that kind of game, which evokes a lot of emotion, sometimes good, sometimes bad. But, you know, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears along the championship trail, that's for sure.
What would you say was the weakest part of your game? Not if you had a weak part. Maybe you didn't.
Oh, I think everybody.
Your silence is telling us an awful lot right now.
No, I think I would have liked to have had a better shot. You know, I think I'd like to have. I mean, every aspect of my game as it went through, I wish I could have done it better. I learned an awful lot from all the players I played with. You know, no more than playing with Wayne. I really think my skill level developed tremendously playing with him. I had to kind of develop as a NHL player, where I didn't really have time to develop at the junior level. And for me, you know, watching Wayne Gretzky in those early years practice and what he could do and how he passed the puck and practice and shot and skated really helped me. But I don't think there's a player out there that didn't wish that he could do just about every asset of the game better. And I speak for myself as well. I wish I could have done a lot of things better.
Well, since you're still in remarkably good shape, have you ever thought about the possibility of pulling a Gordie Howe, that if any of your sons are good enough to make it to the NHL, might you be coming back to play with them?
When they make the nets bigger?
My son is, yeah, exactly. My son's 20 years old now playing junior hockey, and he's getting ready to the point where he could hopefully one day play. And, of course, I think every father would love to have that opportunity. But even more so than that, my little 4-year-old and 2-year-old never had the opportunity to play. And I remember when Mario Lemieux came back and played, and he said the one thing he regrets was his boy not seeing him play hockey. And when he made his comeback, his boy was old enough to remember him playing. And I certainly would have liked to have had that opportunity to play a little bit longer so he was old enough to see it and remember it. But that's just the way it goes, and timing is you can't always have it your way.
Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us. I know you've got work to do back in the sunshine. Send my regards to your family.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining us.
Yeah, nice talking to both of you, and we'll see you guys soon.
All right, Mark, thanks very much. Hit him straight. Talking about the nails, not the golf balls. We're going to step out, and when we come back, Gary will take your calls, answer your emails, all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM204, and NHL.com.
You're listening to NHL Hour with your commissioner, Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM204.
Welcome back, everybody. Our phone number, 877-NHL on XM. That's 877-645-6696. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com, and the board is still flashing at us. Gary, go for it.
Let's take Claudio from New York, who's been on for over a half hour.
That's doing. How you doing, Bill, Commissioner?
Sorry for keeping you waiting.
No, no problem. Well, I just wanted to quickly second motion the comment that a previous caller made. You're doing a terrific job, Commissioner. And I know you will remember, but I had the privilege of meeting you like 3-4 years ago at one of those Canadian Society of New York dinners when they're honoring an NHL great.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I apologize if I don't remember you, but I'm sure if I saw you, I'd know who you were.
Well, yeah, good, thanks. But two quick things on the, well, you mentioned about the 84-game schedule. I mean, I personally think it's a win-win for all parties because if you remove one preseason game and add that extra regular season game, I mean, as you know, I mean, at least what I see in the Rangers preseason games, they're never that filled up. So I think, you know, having two less preseason and an extra regular season, I think, just from a cost basis, would be terrific. And my second was, I remember a couple of years ago, you know, no disrespect to the Ice Bowl game in Buffalo, but there was talk about a Ranger Islander game at Yankee Stadium, and then, you know, I just wanted to know where you are in that, because I personally think that would be such an amazing thing. Whether it's at Yankee Stadium, and heck, I know there's a, you know, plumbing issue. I mean, even if you put porta potties throughout there, I'm sure they'll be happy. And or even at Giants Stadium, you know, even though it'd be weird having the Rangers Islanders play near the former home of the Devils. But anyway, just wanted your take on that.
First of all, the Islanders Rangers rivalry is one of the great ones in all of sports, and sometimes these outdoor games turn out to be a whole lot of fun. I was in Edmonton. I'm planning to be in Buffalo on New Year's Day, and everybody should be watching on NBC. And if we could pull it off, they're logistically difficult. We're fully dependent on the weather. But if we could work it out with the Yankees and with the Rangers and the Islanders, it's something obviously we'd be interested in doing. It would be a lot of fun for hockey fans in New York.
Gary, just to finish up on the 84-game schedule, those extra two games would be geared to allow Western Conference teams to play Eastern Conference teams more often.
Well, we don't have a formal proposal, but that's how I would envision it. So that, in effect, what you could do is if you had 20 games interconference, one division in the other conference you'd play at home, the other division away, and the third division you'd play home and away each year, and then you'd rotate it through. That could work very nicely, but there's a lot of work to be done between here and there.
See what Alex and Sydney started?
Unbelievable.
Good for them.
It is, and it's good for our fans. Dave from New Jersey, you've been on for over a half hour, too. My apologies.
That's all right, Commissioner. Good afternoon to you. As a fan, and I have season tickets in New Jersey. My brother-in-law has them in New York, and someone else in my family has in Philadelphia. So here's my question to you, sir. As a fan and a taxpayer, how can you justify those attendance records when I go to the Devils and the building's half empty at $200 a seat? How can you justify, or the Devils justifying, state taxpayer money to pay for this building that eventually is half empty? I'm going to hang up and listen to your comments. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. We appreciate your support and the support of your family because obviously you're great hockey fans. The building is drawing better than the old Continental Airlines Arena, which I now think is called the Izod something or other.
Is it?
Something like that. The building may be the nicest building in North America right now in terms of its comfort, its amenities. As I said, attendance is up. The season ticket holder base, and including the suite holders, is, I think, at an all-time high for the Devils. And people are getting used to coming. When they announce the attendance, it's generally paid tickets that are bought, and the Devils are doing quite well. I think people continue to have to get used to going to a new place, new routines and the like. Also, because of all the bars and other places you can be in the building while the game's being played, sometimes seats look empty when people are in one of the restaurants or one of the lounges watching the game from there.
Like once the Devils get up 4-0, people go for a break.
And well, or they mount the comeback like they did last night.
Right.
But the other thing that's important, the building in Newark is a public-private partnership. Jeff Vanderbeek, the owner of the Devils, and the other owners contributed a substantial amount of money towards the construction of this building. And I believe that this building will do great things for Newark because somewhere between 2 and 3 million people are going to be going to this building each year, not just for hockey games, but for family shows, for concerts, for the circus. And these are people who, I can assure you, at no other time would have thought about going to Newark to do anything. And so this is an opportunity to help Newark's revival. Newark's one of the great cities that is on its way to a great comeback because of this terrific building. And I think the ownership of the Devils and the leadership of Newark should be commended for the foresight of doing something this important for this city. There you have it.
Nice. I'm speechless.
Well, okay, then we'll go to Paul in San Antonio. Paul, you there?
How are you, sir, today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. As somebody who grew up on minor league hockey in Phoenix and San Diego and now in San Antonio, appreciate what the NHL does. And it is the best game ever played on any surface.
Well, we agree with you.
Okay. Question I have, sir, is especially with some of these hits that some of these guys are taking, I know Mr. Campbell was doing a great job. Unfortunately, he has to be the disciplinarian. Does the PA ever get involved more than just representing their player when they go and talk to Mr. Campbell? Are they also looking at protecting their other clients, the players that got hit?
Well, we would hope so, and I believe Paul Kelly, the new executive director, has said that's a goal of his, because when the union is involved, and they're involved in all of these hearings, they have an opportunity to be heard, to talk about their view of the circumstance, to talk about what they think the appropriate punishment is or isn't in any given case. This is a fully inclusive process, and I think it's important that not just the player who is the one who is being the subject of supplementary discipline be taken into account. You also have to look at the victim and the overall circumstances. The fact of the matter is, and I've said this before, Coley Campbell has a very difficult job because no two cases are identical, and you really have to have a great feel for the game and understand the dynamics of playing the game to make the determinations that he does. And I've always been very comfortable with the way he's conducted supplementary discipline, and I believe for the most part our fans are, and I believe the players are too.
And knowing Colin Campbell the way I do, I know that he goes to every length possible to ensure fairness. I mean, he's that kind of guy. By the way, how well do you know Paul Kelly, Gary?
Paul and I have spent a fair amount of time together. We the first time we got together, we spent some time in my office. We took in a game together at The Rock in New Jersey, in Newark. We spent about 7 hours together. I then went up to the Players Association's offices to meet with him the day of the Hall of Fame inductions. It's interesting. It's been reported that that was the first time I was ever in the Players Association's offices, which isn't exactly right. It was the first time I was in their new offices. I had obviously been to their other offices, and they've had two or three others many times in the course of the last 15 years. And we're communicating on a regular basis. Paul also joined us at the Board of Governors meeting in Pebble Beach. I had asked if he would be comfortable coming out and talking to the governors as a group, and he did that last Thursday evening, and then he stayed and joined us for dinner. And so, you know, I'm all in favor of having a good open dialogue and a constructive relationship with the Players Association. I think it's vital to the game that we have a good relationship, and we're going to work on our end very hard at that. We have an email. Hank in Windsor, Ontario, says that everyone can see that goalie gear is unnecessarily too large. What is the NHL and the NHLPA doing about this? Surely a prototype can be created showing that proper protection is available in much smaller sizes. That's a sentiment with which I agree. It's something that we've been working on, and it requires more work. The goal of goalie equipment isn't to protect the puck from going into the net. It's to protect the goaltender from getting hurt when he does his job. And all you have to do is go back and look at pictures from 20 years ago. Goaltenders have gotten bigger. Yes, goaltenders 20 years ago were probably 3 inches shorter and 20 pounds lighter. And their equipment, which has gotten much lighter, has also gotten much bigger. And that's something we have to take a look at. But goalies are very important, obviously of critical importance. And we don't want to do anything that will jeopardize their safety and open them up needlessly to the possibility of injury. But there needs to be a balance here, because I think most people who watch the game night in and night out agree that the goaltenders have just gotten too big.
If there is change, Gary, to the goaltender's equipment, what is the soonest that it could be implemented?
Well, you need pretty good lead time, because a lot of equipment has to be manufactured from scratch for our goaltenders. We need to be, if we're going to do anything for next season, we've got to do it in the next 60 to 90 days. And I think that's something that I know Paul Kelly's focused on as he makes his tour through the NHL teams. Let's take another call. Zach in Phoenix, you've been on for about a half hour. What can we do for you?
Oh, I just had a couple of points of minor. One's a point of frustration, one's just a question. Obviously, Atlanta's getting their lockout all-star game back this year. Wondering what the chances of seeing that in Phoenix over the next few seasons might be. I know with the Olympics and with Montreal having their 100th anniversary coming up, chances are things are going to get thrown in the mix. And also, point of frustration is that in a market like Phoenix that has an NHL team, that has all four major sports teams and then college teams, that the major cable provider doesn't have the NHL network as of yet, although San Diego, which is a non-NHL market, does have the NHL network. So wondering what can be done about speeding up the process of getting those of us fans and fans to be here in the Valley, getting us the NHL network on the major cable provider.
Both good questions. There is an all-star game in your future. I'm not ready to make an announcement yet, but we know we owe Phoenix a game, and it will be in the rotation in the not-too-distant future, although I guess too distant depends on your respective definition. But we are mindful of the fact that we will at some point in the not-too-far future be coming to Phoenix with an all-star game. Your frustration with the NHL Network, I believe Cox is the predominant cable operator in Phoenix. I believe that we have an arrangement with them and that you can subscribe for the NHL Network. If for some reason your cable operator doesn't give you the opportunity to get the NHL Network, which, by the way, can be available in, I think, 80 million homes based on the arrangements we have with 28 different cable and satellite providers. If in fact your cable operator won't offer it to you, seek alternative means of getting television delivered to your home, and you should be able to get the NHL Network. And also, I think you should pressure Cox to make sure that they're carrying Versus on basic cable as well. Cable operators are responsive to their customers, and if you're not getting the service you want, call them, have your friends call them, and tell them about it. Shimmy from Los Angeles, another half-hour holder. I apologize for the wait, but thanks for joining us.
No problem, Mr. Bettman. How are you today?
I'm good.
I have a question about travel. I know the NHL is changing their schedule next season, and I'm an LA Kings fan. I've been a season ticket holder for over 23 years, and I was wondering how it's going to affect the West Coast teams, because I noticed this year we had a couple games that are a couple of luck one-week layoffs. You know, obviously coming back from London, and then we had another week layoff in the middle of, I think, in the beginning of November or end of October. I was wondering if the scheduler is going to set up these Western teams in the East Coast playing like Boston did at the beginning of the year, their four or five games, and then not traveling as much during the year.
The goal is to try and minimize travel. We try to make our travel as efficient as possible. If the Kings are coming east and they're supposed to play the Devils, the Islanders, and the Rangers, we'd like them to do it on one trip. It's not our idea of a good time to have the players zipping cross-country all the time. It's expensive, and frankly, there's too much wear and tear on the players. Part of what happens in the schedule, though, is a function of the building availability that a club gives us to do their schedule. There are certain times when teams are out of their building because there's a convention or the circus is in for a week, or in the case of Los Angeles, when there are three major league teams, two basketball teams and a hockey team, the scheduling has to go through some permutations. And every time you try to do something to accommodate one aspect of the schedule, trying to make it more competitive, it then affects things like travel, day of the week, and the like. It is an overall balancing act, and there's always some aspect of everybody's schedule that every team doesn't like. But Steve Hatzepetros, who does our scheduling, works for the NHL, does a good job. He works very hard at it. And what people probably don't realize is the schedule goes through somewhere between 85 and 90 different drafts before it gets issued. Very complicated, difficult process.
He's an amazing man. Just to be able to put that together, it's mind-boggling. If anybody would ever like to take a look at how this is put together, they would be just amazed.
Let's take one more call. Tony from Arizona, you're on the line.
Yes, hello, Mr. Bettman. An honor to speak with you. I'm a native New Yorker. I've tried to speak with you in the past, and we had a very poor connection. And I've been a Coyotes season ticket holder for about 4 to 5 years. I'm very pleased with our team's progress in terms of the rebuild and the overall state of hockey in the Valley. But I think my major concern is, I get the feeling, you know, and I listen to quite a few XM broadcasts and call in and contribute my little piece here and there. I guess my greatest concern is how far are we taking the what I describe carnival setting within the arenas? In other words, the dancing girls, the loud screaming music, because many of the season ticket holders that sat in my area are no longer coming back because they're alienated by this process, and they just want a good old hockey game. I was watching a game today on DirecTV, by the way, does have the NHL Station Network, and it was a pleasure to see the little logos and no advertising. I know we're in a different state, but different state of mind, commercially speaking.
It's a great question, and the answer is no two markets are the same, and teams try to appeal to fans of all different ages. They want to be entertaining for kids and older people alike, and frankly, I think compared to some of the other sports, we're pretty mild in terms of what we do in arena. Thanks for the question.
I love it all. Hey, that's it for our NHL Hour. Thanks for being a part of it. Want to let everybody know that coming up next on NHL Home Ice is In the Slot with Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy. And we'll be back with you next Thursday. That is December the 6th, 4 p.m. Eastern, to answer more of your calls and your emails. Until then, take it easy and have a great week of hockey, everybody.